The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Thanks for being with us. We have an eclectic show today. And I like eclectic shows because we've talked so much J.J. Watt and so much Fitz. And there's nothing new on J.J. signed and Fitz is here. And yesterday I talked about Vontaze Burfict a little bit, or Tuesday, a little bit about Vontaze as a possibility with Cardinals. I hear that they are kicking the tires on the former Sun Devil linebacker, which makes a lot of sense. And I say sense with a C, because they put so much money into J.J. Watt, they've got to find some guys that if Hassan Reddick leaves, so on and so forth. So this is a show, I love shows like today because I get to go deep with Kyle Murphy. Those of you that have been around Arizona State Sun Devil football, the last time that they went to the Rose Bowl when it wasn't playing UCLA was with Kyle Murphy and Jake Plummer and Juan Roque and the famous 97 Sun Devil team that ended up losing the final moments to Ohio State. Kyle Murphy was one of the leaders on that team and just a good dude. About 2 weeks ago, he put on Twitter that he decided to go into counseling. He was dealing with some things. And I reached out to him because we do mental health and sports as part of our platform on Sports 360 AZ. I've seen it the last couple of years. We do a women in sports platform and mental health in sports. Those are two areas that are continuing to grow by leaps and bounds. And so when I have a former athlete be open on his social media about, I'm really struggling with something, I think it's important for you guys to hear it. So I reached out to Kyle last week and said, do you want to go deep? And last Thursday, we Zoomed for over 40 minutes. And it's deep. And it's raw. And it's, in my opinion, very helpful to people. And I think, therapeutic. I reached out to Kyle this morning that said, we're going to run it today. And he's excited about it. And he is very vulnerable. I'll just put it at that. And it's coming up at 10:35. And it's good. Vulnerability is a good thing. Especially for guys that play sports, because they're just taught, don't be vulnerable. They're just taught that, life's just about football. And it's not. And even though in our society, we make it like it's the most important thing, it's not. Being a dad, being a father, being a husband, all that stuff we get into and how he kind of got off track and the things that he's having to deal with in therapy and counseling. So that comes up at 10:35. Goody at the Movies is with us, and Bill and I are in this weird spot today. We've seen Coming to America, the new Eddie Murphy remake with Arsenio Hall. The movie was very funny 30 years ago. The problem is we're doing this interview before what they call an embargo, which means you're not allowed to talk about it. Well, the embargo lifts today at 1. So we're going to walk up to the line. We're not going to talk about it in depth. We're going to talk about Eddie Murphy and movies and all that stuff. I will just tell you, in seeing it, there are some laugh out loud moments. But I'm not telling you the plot. I'm not telling you anything more than that. It'll be free later today. And then also the SpongeBob movie's out. So Bill loves that stuff. So Bill Goody-Kunz, chief film critic for Gannett and AZ Central. Bill's working on a piece with Dave Pasch, he was telling me. That's cool. All right, opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, they take care of you. They take care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. They're around the valley. They're around the great state. Spurge is with us. I'm going to rush through Spurge, not really rush through him. First of all, I can't believe coaches at Arizona State, matching shirts. This is so dopey. How did this happen?
Wrong day to wear maroon.
Come on, man. I think from now on, I'm going to end up taking a picture and I'm going to say, okay, this is how I'm dressed. And this, so don't do it. Or you take a picture and say, this is what I'm wearing. Cause we look like dumb and dumber here. Like, what is this? we're like coaches. We're like Bobby Hurley and the assistant coach, man.
Yeah, I'm going on the road, and maybe I'm going on the road with ASU. It seems like, I guess, but not really.
so you're bolting out here to go to a story in El Paso for Cronkite, right?
Yeah. Yep. Going up.
Can you tell me what's the story? Can you talk about it or not?
Yeah. I can talk about it. It's a softball story, and we've got the Hackbarth twins who are in their fifth season and
good players.
Fifth college year. Great players. Yeah. Third year at ASU, and the family, the mom and dad, haven't missed a single game road or away in 3 years of ASU. So yeah. They use all their vacation time. We've done the math. It's like 60,000 flight miles just in season. So we decided it'd be cool to get the angle of what's it like on the road for them, because they kind of travel. There's like six families that pretty much go to most of the road games, and we're going to see what they do there. They told us before at Alabama, they almost got thrown out of Alabama before because they were just louder than 2,000 Alabama fans there. So we're excited to see what they do up in El Paso. So we decided to make the trip up there. Three of us are working on it. So photographer, I'm doing video, and we got a writer. So it'll be cool.
Are you flying or are you driving?
Oh, we're driving.
Road trip.
Yep. Road trip today.
There's a burger spot at Wilcox that I think Herm stopped the football team in Wilcox. I think when they went to El Paso his first year, there's a spot in Wilcox. In Wilcox, if you blink, you're through it. It's two stoplights or one stoplight or no stoplights on I-10. There's a place in Wilcox. You might want to hit up your guys over at ASU with Herm and say, what's the name of the spot that Herm stopped at? Because Herm was raving about the milkshakes that they served there. So,
that sounds cool.
That sounds cool. And ASU basketball plays tonight. Are people on campus buzzing about that at all? Or are they just like, please, just get this over with. We've had enough.
Yeah, we just saw the women get bounced, and I think people realize with the men, it's probably going to be a similar outcome in the Pac-12. Everyone's still excited about Remy Martin's game winner against Washington State. That's pretty much the peak. Yeah. I don't think there's really much more to talk about. I mean, we've seen a couple players play well the last couple weeks. Jalen Graham's been great, but there's really not a lot of expectations. I think people were bummed that, you know, there was no game on Monday for a final home game, but at least Remy goes out with a game winner. So
it was like an hour before the game they pulled the plug on it, right?
Yeah, I know some of the writers were already there, and I was on my way.
Crazy. All right, be safe. Get out of here. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Brad.
See ya. There's Spurge over at ASU. You know, on the sports thing, like tonight is the first or the last game for the Suns in the first half of the season. They play Golden State. Nobody can deny that it's been a wildly successful first half of the season for the Suns. I think if we were to sit here and be wide open, honest with each other, though, if you've watched them most, and I do watch them most every game, whether it's live or my DVR here in my office, DeAndre Ayton is still this. He is still this. And I see this immense talent at times, and then there's other times where I just see this wild gazelle out there that's just trying to figure it out. And he's playing somewhat out of control times. And I see Chris Paul, you know, slow down. And I see some chirping on the court, like, just relax, man, relax. Monty the other night, kind of getting into Devin Booker about you've got to control your emotions. And I would agree with that, because when it gets into playoffs in May, you're going to have playoff games. And the last thing that you can have is boop, boop. And the whole thing about, well, I'm not getting the respect. I just feel like you don't want to cost yourself any position at all. And Devin Booker's had a great season. And does he deserve more respect? Absolutely. But you can yell about it. I can yell about it. If the coach is saying you've got to control your emotions, who's going to win in that one? The coach. And he's right. So, you know, on the Cardinals front, Vontaze Burfict, those of you that have watched me through the years know that I was not a fan of how Vontaze was able to get away with things at Arizona State, not being made available to talk about his personal fouls. Was it seven personal fouls a senior year? And cost them a game at Oregon. He was just out of control. I had Marvin Lewis on the show a couple of years ago. We tried to talk about Vontaze. He wasn't having any of it. Vontaze has since gone on to the Bengals, the Raiders, but he's going to be cheap. And that's just a fact. And so in the salary cap, the Cardinals are kicking the tires on Vontaze Burfict. They can deny it, but they are. That's what you do this time of year. Oh, no. Okay, whatever. I trust people on that front a lot more. And I get it. It's the business side. But if Vontaze comes here and they can make him fit and they feel like they can have him be on the field and be productive and not be someone who's out of control and get personal foul penalties, this has nothing to do about a Sun Devil on the field. I don't care. I'm not one of those people. It's like, oh my gosh, it's so great they have a Sun Devil. It doesn't matter. If you can play, just please be able to play. You've missed the playoffs 5 years in a row. That's it. Real simple. I don't care where he went to school. Tucson, Flagstaff, doesn't matter. Please produce. So they're looking into that. The Coyotes won last night against the Kings. That's that. On the other side, Good Eat the Movies, and then Kyle Murphy. I'm Brad Sismat. All right, as promised, Goody is with us. Bill Goodykunst, chief film critic for Gannett, AZ Central. Make sure you subscribe. Take care of the people at AZ Central that work so dang hard at what they do and read his content. Okay, so as we tape this, we're like a couple hours away from being able to talk about Coming to America, right?
Yes, correct.
So we're kind of in this no man's land where we can and we can't, or we shouldn't. But I'll just say there were a couple laugh out loud moments, and I'll leave it at that. Because you can take that, well, then it must be really good, but I'm not saying that. But I'm not saying it's really bad, but I'm not going to say much of anything other than there were a couple of moments with a nod, from my view, towards the first one that were funny.
Now, there were some funny things in it. And I, like you, I'm not saying good or bad. I'll say this about it. It reminds me, Coming to America reminds me a little bit of a movie like The Karate Kid or something, where in my mind, it's built up an outsized reputation. The original I'm talking about.
Yes.
The original, there were some really funny parts in the original. Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall were really good in it. The movie itself, I don't think, is a great movie. It's a fun movie. It's a good movie. Yeah. Those two are great. And I'll also say, and again, no reflection on the new movie.
We're 2 hours away from the embargo being lifted. So many people are going to see it after the embargo is lifted.
One of the things about Eddie Murphy in movies back then, including Coming to America, was that he always had, there was this edge to him. Mm-hmm. And part of it was his reputation. I mean, coming from Saturday Night Live, from movies like 48 Hours, you know, great movie, 48 Hours. You even if he was doing a kind of a more laid back role, which that definitely was. I mean, he compared to the other films, you had the sense of danger, like he could do anything. You know,
Beverly Hills Cop was great. A banana in the tailpipe.
And you keep waiting for. I mean, you don't necessarily wait for it, but you're aware that something could happen.
Yeah.
And the trick is, has that been honed down over the years? And so many movies like, you know, Dr. Dolittle remakes and things like that.
Yeah.
Curious choices from Eddie Murphy, but everybody has their reasons, so.
And we'll leave it at that. By the way, if you're wondering if Bill is sad about being on with me, no. He's in full-blown allergy season because we had a typhoon roll through here yesterday, minus the rain. Oh. So I'm glad you're fighting through it, and I just wanted to make the audience aware.
Thank you.
SpongeBob on the Run. So SpongeBob on the Run, we can talk fully about. What did you think of the latest SpongeBob installment?
I thought it's silly, it's absurd, it's ridiculous. I loved it. I'm a big SpongeBob fan. My kids like SpongeBob, but I liked SpongeBob before they did. So as a TV critic, SpongeBob used to win with the TV critics we gave awards and stuff. And it was sort of like if your high school drama class gave out awards, but all the real stars came.
Yeah.
It was pretty low rent in terms of award shows, but everybody came because they like getting awards from critics, I guess. But we used to give SpongeBob the award for the children's programming a lot because it's silly and it's fun, but it's a smart kind of silly. And, yeah. And I think I wrote in my review is like, you know, this is the third SpongeBob movie, by the way, and the show is still on the air. And my question in my review was, how many SpongeBob movies do we need? And the answer is more. I enjoy it. And I believe that Plankton, his nemesis, is one of the great characters in all of TV.
So without giving it away, from what I've read, Gary gets stolen, and I'll leave it at that. And
yes.
And so for Gary to get stolen, for those of us that have watched SpongeBob and have had our kids grow up with SpongeBob, and secretly we're sitting there giggling and laughing as adults saying, this is pretty funny. Is there adult humor in this? Is there lines that we would catch that our 7-year-old, I don't have a 7-year-old, but if you have youngins, they wouldn't catch.
Yeah, sure. Because they end up having to go to the lost city of Atlantic City, which is kind of it's a Las Vegas like place. And they ask like one of the lines, they say, they're looking at some brochure for Patrick and SpongeBob, and because they're thinking that's where Gary ends up, and they have to go rescue him. Yeah. And they have to and he's like, oh, it's a place of like sin and debauchery and all that. And Patrick is like, wow, sin, debauchery, and it's missing too. this has everything, you know. That's what I said in my review. I said, if you think that's funny, this is a movie for you. If you don't think that's funny, boy, have you wandered into the wrong movie, because yeah. You're not going to like it. But I just think it's really, I enjoyed it. It's a lot of fun. You know what you're going in there for, yeah. And it delivers on what you want.
Yeah. You're going to turn it off for about a minute, or for an hour and 45 minutes. You're going to come out of there belly laughing a little bit. And I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time. Get better. Stay safe. Thanks.
Thanks. You too.
All right. One of the things I love about what we do here at Sports 360 is the mental health and sports side of things. I figured a couple of years ago, I started to see where I was talking to former NFL players or just athletes in general that were going through stuff, and people were going through stuff. And then the pandemic hit and lots of people were going through stuff. And the feedback has been terrific, because people need to see the real side that we're dealing with anxiety, we're dealing with depression, we're dealing with anger, we're dealing with trying to figure out our space in life. You guys have heard me through the years talk to former NFL or former athletes and call them lost souls. They're trying to figure out what to do when it's all over, when they run out the tunnel for the last time, and now they go to work and they're not running out in front of 50,000 people, and they're not being given free cars, and they don't have the greatest parking spot, and they don't have free meals, and they don't have all this stuff. And they're just trying to assimilate back into society. So last week, I saw Kyle Murphy. You talk about a great Sun Devil and a great name with ASU football. The downside of Kyle Murphy is that he hangs around with Jake Plummer and Juan Roque. Those guys are dopes and nitwits, and I love them to death. But Kyle Murphy was one of the leaders of the team that took ASU back to the promised land. You know, ASU, we had Doug Haller on earlier this week from The Athletic, and Doug put it exact and succinct. Next year, university is Arizona State when it comes to football. Well, next year, we're going to be great. And we've been hearing that since the Rose Bowl team. And going to El Paso, all expenses paid, is not what it's all about. So Kyle is doing his thing on social media. He's working with athletes on the offensive line side, which is great. But I noticed that he started to become vulnerable and wide open on some subjects that I felt like, you know, I'm just going to reach out. And if he doesn't want to talk, it's cool. So first and foremost, Mr. Murphy, with that long-winded buildup, it's good to see you, Kyle. Where are you these days? What are you doing? How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's good to see you too. I am currently in my classroom. I'm a teacher in Garden Grove, California. I teach at Pacifica High School. I am a special education teacher. I've been doing this. I'm in my 15th year, which doesn't seem possible. Yeah, I started 2006, is 15 years ago, which is bonkers, seeing as we, you know, went 1996. So it's like all of it is a lot. But I'm doing well. I'm married, been married for 15 years. 17 years going.
Get it right. Get it right, man. Don't get it wrong.
I know.
That's brutal.
Bad math. and then I've got two kids who you see them on social media, Twitter all the time, which is Blue Eyed Freckle Face and Beefcake, who are 11 and 8, and they're eating us out of house and home. He's 8. He's not going to be 9 until July. And he is basically right to the middle of, like, he's right underneath my chest. And it's like, I don't know what is going to happen. And now it's funny, because now I really feel for my mom and my dad and everything they had to go through with me and feeding me and all of that kind of stuff. So, but I'm doing good. As you said, just, you know, I started to, these are things that I've dealt with before. I was in therapy when I was in seventh grade, dealing with stuff with my biological father and how I was handling that and what was happening. And it helped. And then I didn't go to therapy when I ended football, but I needed to. I should have. I was in a depression for a year. It was hard. And as you in the build up, you know, your whole life. And it's not so much the thing. Like for me, it wasn't about the stuff I got. I think it was. It's just that's what your whole life is about. Right. That my whole life was. Yes, you go to school, but your life isn't about school. Your life. School happens and school is what you do. Sorry about the buzzing. This life is about sports. It's about doing well and doing those things because that's what you're really there to do, right? That's and your time is like your time and particularly in football, so regimented, right? So learning that skill, learning, and then when that's done, what do you do with all that downtime? Like for me, when I was in school and even just my personality, nobody's harder on me than myself. Like, and too much so, like so much so that, I mean, friends will tell you, you know, they'll talk about, you know, kind of like the buildup you did for me. Like that makes me uncomfortable. I loved my time and I love talking about friends and I love talking about like what the team did. I don't like talking about what I did. It makes me uncomfortable. And part of that's my personality. Part of it's, you know, the position I played. But all of that, you're trying to figure all of those things out while you're also going, okay, what do I do with my life now? Like not just dealing with all that time. It's what do I do now? I mean, I got a degree in broadcast journalism. I thought that's what I wanted to do. Realized I loved radio and loved doing the things I did, but also realized I didn't like being on the outside looking in of a team, right? Yeah. I liked being a part of it. And I didn't want to stay in Arizona and for a variety of reasons, the heat being one of them, opportunities for my wife for her job and what she did. And then, you know, I think it's for me, I needed to get away. I needed to just not be. And as my wife put it recently, she put it very well, you know, your world is much bigger than you. Right. Because of who you are. And then I was also, you know, on the radio, FM radio with Dave Pratt. So there's a whole nother segment of fans that knew me. And so when you know that many people, you are always on, right? As professional athletes know all the time, they're on, you can never be off. And so that's exhausting. Right. And it's not something I revel in. And so moving back to California was good for me. And I ended up getting into high school coaching and then, you know, just poured everything into that. That was easy, right? It's football. I can pour myself into it. And everything else was secondary, much like when I played. And then that ended. And then it was like, okay, now what do I do? Mm. And, you know, and I had my kids, we had our kids. And so there was that. But again, it's a lot of trying to figure out. And, that's not talked about. Like, it's just not talked about. You don't talk about it because much like you don't talk about death, right? You don't want to talk about the ending of something. However, if you don't talk about it, you don't necessarily have a plan. And there are guys who have better plans, right? There are, Damian Richardson had a plan and he has executed that plan and he's now an orthopedic surgeon. Kirk Robertson had a plan and he's a pediatric dentist. Not to say that they didn't go through their own things. It's just, I didn't have a clear cut plan of what I wanted to do or I thought I did. And then that changed. And so when I got to this point where I texted or I tweeted last week, it was, I've been in therapy for 6 weeks and it's just, there are things about myself that I've known, but thought I could overcome that, you know, I would have these discussions with my wife and we were in this, you know, kind of a bad cycle. You're good. You're good. You're good. You're good. And then every disagreement, not argument, every disagreement turned into an argument or turns into, I get super defensive or, you know, whatever the case may be. And it just, that cycle needed to end. And I didn't really realize it's been about 18 months, 2 years where I haven't really felt great about myself. Where I was. And a lot of that is a byproduct of those things, not, you know, and as I wrote, not living in the gray, I'm, I'm not great at that. And football doesn't make that easy. You're very, you know, it's a very black and white. It's becoming more collaborative, but it's not a collaboration. Sports in general hasn't been. You're a coach, you tell people what to do, and that's how it is. And so that's how I've lived my life, right and wrong. That's how you do things.
Kyle Murphy with us for a couple of minutes. This is starting the conversation. And so the conversation that I am having with you about life after football, but you said a lot there. So let's unpack this. If you're uncomfortable, just say, Brad, I don't want to talk about it. It's fine.
And I'd like to address, I'm more than comfortable, and I appreciate you providing that. Part of the reason why I tweeted that out is because I want people to know that it is okay. It's okay to talk about how you feel. It's okay to not be okay. It's okay to be vulnerable because I don't think, and it's not, I don't think, not enough, and particularly men, feel comfortable being that way because of the stoic nature in which they're raised for the most part. So I'm an open book. I'm happy to share. And I think it's important that people hear, as you have had others, that athletes are people and that we go through stuff. And this is how you manage it. It's you deal with it.
So you mentioned earlier that you went through some stuff with your biological father. Mm-hmm. What happened?
My parents divorced when I was three. And it was just me and my mom until I was six. My mom remarried my dad, who I refer to my biological father as my father. My dad is my stepdad. He's been with me since I was six. Mm. So I'm 45 now. So, you know, he's been with me, you know, for 39 years, a good stretch. In fact, he just had partial replacement knee surgery. And it's very funny to your 45-year-old son giving the 69-year-old dad the advice on how to handle that. And then, you know, my father, he's a narcissist and always has been. And I've always been the parent. I've always taken care of him. I've always had to push my feelings aside in order to keep that relationship going, right? Mm. To get over stuff. And, you know, I've been the kid who has sat on the steps, the after school special where you're sitting on the steps and you're waiting for your father to pick you up and it doesn't happen. I've been, I had my bike, I was mugged and my bike stolen, a bike he got me. And he, you know, the first thing he asked is, did I put up a fight? Not mm-hmm. if I'm okay, you know, those kinds of things. And so it came to a point where, you know, I have realized that it's too toxic for me. And I don't love the word toxic. It's more, I just don't have time for it. Like in my daily life, I don't have time to take care of him. And so that's part of it. You know, that feeling like I've always been a parent or I've always been an adult since a certain age.
Hmm. And so the position that you played in football, people may not know. There's people that do know. Obviously you were on the offensive line. You were a protector.
Right.
That's ingrained in you to protect.
It's everything about that position, which I love. And I think it's important. I love that feeling of protecting, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, you are sacrificing yourself for the adulation of the team and the adulation of others, right? The quarterback, the running back, the receivers, and you do so willingly and you're a part of a group. You're not, you know, while I'm Kyle Murphy of the ASU team, I'm part of that unit, right? It's mm-hmm. those five guys. So when you're playing, yes, there's you, but you're really, it's like, well, how's the offensive line playing? And so you're a group. You're not an individual, so to speak. And you don't necessarily have to deal with those things. But that nature of being a protector, of putting yourself second, is something that isn't always healthy. It's not always healthy. You need to put yourself first. And I'm terrible at that because I feel, as I wrote, I feel egotistical. I feel arrogant. I feel people are going to look at me and say, I'm trying to bring attention to myself. You know, what I wrote on Twitter took me about an hour because I was trying to be very deliberate with what I was saying, that it was more like a blog in which things, you know, kind of stacked off one another, mm-hmm. but also being very cognizant of what I was saying, that it wasn't so much, hey, look at me, more, these are the things I'm dealing with and here's how I'm dealing with them. And,
sure.
And so, but that gives you kind of a look inside my head. Like, that took me an hour because I was so, I'm so ingrained to think that way. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad way of thinking. It's just, it's a reshaping that I have to do to make sure that I'm taking care of my needs and doing so in a way that doesn't, isn't at the expense of others. Right.
So let me jump in here. So when you're talking about that, so the relationship with your biological father, you just have said, I can't take care of you. You are all about you. I have to take care of my wife. I have to take care of my kids. I have a job to take care of these kids at school. And I just don't have time for this because it's just too much of a burden on me. And is that what essentially you're saying, Kyle?
I will say it even more succinct. I haven't talked to my father on the phone since 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's a lot more that goes into it, things that happened, but ultimately it was that I had a conversation with him in December of 2006 about issues that I thought we needed to deal with. Right. And I said that to him, like, not quite so eloquently. I just said, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't. Yeah. I can't. And so on that day, I just was like, because again, I had to give you a little bit more backstory. When I was 18 and I came to Arizona, I hadn't lived in the same city as my father since I was. Instead, when I lived with him in Georgia for 3 months during the summer. And then when I got my scholarship and I moved to Arizona, oh, he moved. Oh, okay. And so he and I had that conversation at breakfast, but it was up to me to say, okay, the things that have happened in the past, I'll put behind us, right? I'll put behind me. And I move forward. And then I was dealing with those same things. So that's 93. So I'm dealing with those things again, 13 years later in 2006, as you said, we didn't have kids yet, but I had my wife and I'm like, I'm done. Like, I can't, I can't anymore.
Was it impacting your marriage?
It wasn't, I think it would have, mm-hmm. right? And I think, well, I shouldn't say that. I think how it impacted my marriage is that she saw how hurt I would get at things that he would not do or, you know, reach out or how you spoke to me. That's how it impacted. It didn't, like, in terms of us, how we got together probably made us stronger because she was there for me. But do I love my father? Yes. That doesn't change, right? Like, I love him because he's my father. And there's parts of me, my laugh, like my nose, certain expressions I do, like, yeah. I hear him and see him in me. So it's not like I can avoid him in that respect. But I'm not going to give up my time to deal with nonsense that he refuses to change, that I've had that conversation with him. I can't get into that circle with him because he's not going to change. He's 68 years old. He's lived on his own since he was, in his 50s, 40s. So he's not going to change. And that's okay. I mean, here's a perfect example, Brad. He's seen our kids because he's talked with my wife on Facebook and done things like that. She just put out something on Friday that said, hey, if you're ever in town, hit us up. That's the first time I have said that is okay to say since 2006. We have not heard a response from that. And it's like, that's the kind of thing. I put myself out there and it's not reciprocated. And for me, it then takes me back to how I felt, that here I am putting myself out there. Here I am trying and it doesn't work again. So those are the kinds of things like that's easier for me to do since I did it so long ago. But again, putting myself ahead of others it's very difficult.
Walk me through counseling. So this has been in the last 6 weeks mm-hmm. that you have had all of these emotions stirred up. And it's just time to do something about it. So the last 6 weeks of counseling, what has it been like and has pushed you to the point where you finally reacted, put it out there on social media, and are trying to figure some things out in your life right now?
It's, you know, because I had been in therapy before, it wasn't as daunting as I wasn't as nervous. I equate it to almost like an addict. You know, you have to be ready for it. You have to be, people can tell you to go, people can encourage you to go, but unless you feel ready, right, to be vulnerable, to be willing to open up and share your, you know, what you're going through, it's not going to be worthwhile. So it was in that cyclical approach that my wife and I were going through where it just wasn't changing, right? And it just, something had to change. Like, we can't keep living this way. Otherwise she and I aren't going to make it. And that's not okay with either of us. So, you know, I reached out into, I went through my insurance, and just what I did, it was, I just started looking through names and looking through places that were close to my home.
What were you looking for?
It's hard to put that into words. One of the things I do really well is I can read people really well. I'm very, like, my instincts are pretty good about that. And I was just, if a name popped off, like if it was close to my home, if it's something like it connected with me, right? Like if I read it and I was just like, yeah, let me try that. And I called four different places, and got a call back from two. And the place I ended up going with had the earliest appointment was they had an appointment within a week. They asked if I wanted a man or a woman. I said a woman. I had therapy with a woman before. It's odd. And I've shared this with a lot of people. While I'm a football player and I, you know, that manly aspect, I'm very in touch with the feminine side of who I am because of my mom, and she's a therapist, and that's a whole nother story. But, you know, how she raised me, and I was raised around women. All my cousins within 10 years older than me and younger than me are women. So having that has shaped me, and I'm in tune to that. So I wanted to have a therapist who was a woman. And so, she and I, our first session, you know, it's just kind of a get to know you session. Like, you know, hey, what brings you here? You know, and you just start kind of talking. And as you can tell, like, I've never really had a trouble speaking.
No, you haven't. As long as I've known, you haven't had problems.
Right.
I know that.
To go into journalism. And so.
So what did you tell her? What did you say? When she said, why are you here? What did you say? Could you even put it into a simple sentence or two?
I said that a lot of I've been fighting with my wife. You know, we have these good patches and then these not so good patches. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out what those are. And I think what I told her was it needs to change. Something needs to change within me, right? I can't keep going. I can't keep going in the same circle. It's not healthy. I don't feel good about those things. And then it, you know, kind of like what this conversation has happened. You start talking and then that leads to another thought. And then that thought leads to something you've gone through. And then that thought brings you to realization. And that, like, the thing I really like about my therapist, and everybody's different in terms of the style, she validates what I'm saying, right? Asks a few questions, but really allows me to just talk and get stuff out. So by allowing me to talk, that's where she found that I use the word but a lot. So I was doing this, but I did What she told me, and this is part of living in the gray, is that when you take the but away, right? So, hey, you did great. This would be great for students. Hey, you did great, but remember to do this, this, and this. Well, what happens is that the brain doesn't hear. Once you say but, you've discounted everything you've said before that. So it's learning how to put a period on those things, right? Hey, you did great. Remember, So that, because what it is doing is telling you that two things are acceptable at the same time. Whereas but tells you just there's only one thing that's acceptable, and life is not like that, right? There are multiple things that happen at once. So allowing me to talk and share that, she brought that up to me and then guides me, you know, how can we do that? Or there's role playing where, you know, hey, I need to bring this up to my wife. I again, as I said in the tweet, I concentrate on the words a lot, but I've lost the tone. And so the words don't really matter if your tone is disrespectful or puts people on the defensive. So, you know, working on that, how can I phrase a question so that it doesn't come across as I'm demanding or I'm expecting, but I'm legitimately, I want to know your answer, right? As opposed to I know what the answer should be and I'm framing it that way. So things like that.
You've been in therapy now 6 weeks, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And in those 6 weeks time, the key point here for the audience is this stemmed from you and your biological father, but it did spill over into your marriage and you're trying to figure out the biological father situation as anybody would, but you may not be able to. Am I summing this up correctly? I'm curious about things like, did you ever have your dad come over to you at Sun Devil Stadium after a game and say, I'm so proud of you, son. And that was it. Was he at any of your games? Or was your relationship gone?
Part of it is him. The other part is my family and how I was raised and, you know, my dad, my mom, my stepdad, my mom, my brother's 9 years younger than me. So, you know, I took him around with me a lot, right? Which is, again, I'm very much a parent figure to him or I was. That has changed now that he has his own kids. And so those things, guilt was a big thing, right? In my family, putting guilt on people. And so, you know, dealing with that, again, that goes back to, if you start talking about yourself, I start feeling guilty about myself, right? Mm-hmm. Like those things. And so, yes, my father went to some high school games to visit. My father it seemed like it was to talk about me. Like it wasn't so much to get to like where I am. It's like, hey, look what my son's doing. And yeah, he went to ASU games because he lived there and loved it. And I've gotten, you know, and for my stepdad, that's, you know, his family, his side of the family, when he married my mom, you know, wasn't thrilled that she had a son already. And so I had to deal with that crap as well. Mm. And the way they treated my mom. But you know, of course, when I became a player at ASU and tickets are available, hey, can we get tickets to a game?
Yeah.
And I have fought with my dad about that. My stepdad about that. He and I was pissed. I was angry. I was like, no, I don't want to. But there and then I did it for him, right? If I didn't, it would have caused him a lot of consternation. And so I did it for him. And so it's all of those things. And it's, for me, it becomes about expectations and what I expect. I expect people to, again, I'm a very giving person too. So, you know, I expect people to be like me and people aren't like me. People don't always think of other people. And so what that then does to me is it angers me. Like I get pissed off. Mm-hmm. And that stuff will happen in my house, right? Where, you know, I make coffee for my wife every morning, you know, but if I have asked a few different times to put something away or not have something somewhere and it doesn't happen, it's like, because I look at it as a courtesy thing. Like here I am asking and it's not done. So then I take it as disrespect. That's not how it's intended. It's just, could be whatever they forgot. They, you know, something else came up.
Sure.
But I take it as it's personal against me, and it's not, right? It's just, it's not. And so not everything is DEFCON 5. It's just,
that's a good way to put it. What I'm curious is I want to bring football back into the discussion a little bit. So when you're at Arizona State, Coach Cazzetto,
mm-hmm.
Coach Snyder,
mm-hmm.
did they know what was going on at home? Did they know what was going on with you and your father, your biological father?
They knew my family and they knew my parents were divorced. Mm-hmm. I didn't reveal any of that, you know, like that piece of it. Yeah. It was just they, you know, my, cause that always asked about my mom and dad though. So like, how's your mom doing? How's your dad doing? Is your brother all right? Like he always has made sure to ask about my family. And as he did with others, in terms of my biological father, I don't know that anybody knew anything. I mean, probably the person that probably knew the most was Glenn Gable. Cause Glenn and I were roommates and he, you know,
That's how it works. Yeah, I get that. So none of your teammates, because that team was so close.
Yeah,
They did not know what was going on.
No, and I think if you were to talk to the majority of guys, the majority of us didn't know what was happening, like that personal, what was going on in your life. If there was chaos, you know, where was it? Now you would get pockets, right? Like I would say the offensive line knew, you know, kind of what we were going through in terms of just a day to day, you know, life thing and how you're dealing with your girlfriend and school. But we didn't really talk about, you know, the existential life crises that are happening.
Late '90s, you're not doing that. Late '90s,
no, you're just not
playing football. That's just how it was, right?
Yeah. And Pat and I mean, I remember Pat and I had, you know, Tillman and I had some, you know, a couple really good deep conversations, but we still didn't get into the personal aspect of what we were going through because again, you're 18 to 22, you're testosterone laden, you're not.
Yep.
And you haven't been taught in terms of from football, that's okay, right? It's still seen as a sign of, it's changing, I think, but it's still seen as a sign of weakness. You're not tough enough to deal with these things. You're not strong enough mentally to overcome. Like, man, life is hard. It's really, really hard. And, you know, parenting is the hardest thing I've ever done, ever. It's, you know, and so all of those insecurities and things you don't like about yourself are magnified, right? Because I start then worrying, because I see things that my son or my daughter does, oh, great, I'm passing this along. I don't want to do that. And, you know, like my daughter says, I'm sorry. She says it all the time because I say, and I'm getting out of the habit, but I say it, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm in your way or I bump you, like, I'm sorry. Oh, my bad. Oh, like, and so you're constantly putting yourself at fault for stuff that's not your fault. It's just stuff that happens. And so that kind of stuff. And so I think all of that was the precipice to me going and finally going, hey, I'm not, it's too much. Like it's time. Something needs to change.
When did you bottom out?
Probably the last 6 weeks ago, my wife and I had another fight, you know, another argument that turned into, you know, just going back and forth with venom, like, and trying what I have learned. And then what she and I have learned together is we each try to win the argument.
Yeah.
Right. We're trying to win. And she and I are both incredibly stubborn and we're both incredibly competitive, which is, you know, not great when you're having an argument.
TNT right there.
Right.
Man.
And so, you know, constantly trying to win. And then that boils over into the next day because you're upset with each other. And it's exhausting, right? It just becomes tiring and makes everything else that much more difficult because the person that you want to lean on or the person that you have next to you to support you, you're constantly bickering with or fighting. And that's the thing. It wasn't bickering. It was venomous. It was, we're trying to hurt the other or win. It's like, man, I think you can talk to enough people, but I love her so much that I can't, it just, it wasn't working. It just wasn't working. And I wasn't feeling good. I didn't realize how bad I didn't realize how unhappy I was with myself, with how my behavior had been, how I'd been acting until last Thursday. I was driving into work. It was the day I posted that. And I just had a great sense of appreciation for where I was and what I've been through and what I have in my life and how thankful I am that I started therapy. And just the, I can just feel that shift, right? Like, I mean, and it's, and I don't mind sharing that. Like we, my daughter, you know, is in therapy and not for the same, you know, give her the tools. She's in middle school now. Middle school is really, really hard. You know, from a figuring out who you are and you're going through, you know, all of your changes through puberty, give her the tools, right? Give her the confidence to say, hey, I can deal with this situation. I know how to handle that situation. So again, the bottoming out is just one more fight that just became the, you know, kind of the camel that, or the straw that broke the camel's back.
Okay. Couple quick questions and then I'll let you go. And I appreciate you being wide open on this, as you said you would. Do you think that anything football related with concussions has anything to do with where you are in life now?
No, I don't.
Do you think that you're going to get through this okay? Or do you think, Brad, as I'm sitting here right now, I don't know.
No, I 100% think I will.
Good.
And I think it's a byproduct of the work that I'm willing to do, being vulnerable, being open. And I, as I've told some other people, the more I'm open about it, the easier it is to talk about and the easier it is to deal with those insecurities because you see support from the outside. Like, you know, I got a lot of support from tweeting out and a lot of people, and that matters. Like it matters. It's why kids love to be recruited. It's why free agents want to be free agents because you want people to be there to support you and to help you and to tell you that it's going to be okay or that they've been through it and they can, you know, understand. Like empathy goes so far, right? It's such a big piece that I think as humans, we don't employ enough being empathetic towards people. And so, I know my therapist and I have such a good connection as to where we are right now, that it's only going to grow in terms of the work and what we find out and what I deal with. But yeah, I think there are more athletes that are successful in therapy because they get into that mindset of like, let's do the work, like let's work, it's work time. And it's just a different kind of work.
You're lifting weights. You're lifting weights for your brain. You're lifting weights for your emotions. You're doing the 5:30 running the stairs, but it's just a different way of going about it. And to put a bow on this, if you were to give advice to people that are watching this saying, man, I am right there where he is, because you're not alone, Kyle.
Right.
You're not alone. So what advice would you give people?
Seek. When you feel ready, if that person is ready, then if people are unsure, they can DM me and we can talk about it. And I can, like, I don't have a problem with that. I think if you are thinking about it, then you should go. Then you should, you know, see what you can afford, see what your insurance is able, what you're able to do with your insurance, all of that stuff. And then go. And then the biggest piece of advice I would give is that understand that you may not find the therapist that connects to you right away. It's like medication. Sometimes you need a different strength. You need a different type.
Sure.
You have to be willing to tell people or trust yourself and say, I don't feel connected. I don't feel like that person hears me or whatever the case may be. And it's okay to then say, you know what? I need to go find another one. Cause not every therapist is not for every person. But it's like, I was just telling my son the other day, it's like the right decision. He knows right from wrong. I said, if you have to think about it, you know what's wrong, bud.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're thinking about it now, then to me, you're ready to go. And it's scary and opening yourself up and being vulnerable and sharing those things that you have kept deep down and inside of you for that long is hard. And it could take you know, it may not, and it's not a one size fits all, right? In terms of same thing, like this is my progress in 6 weeks, but I've also, having been in therapy previously and then having a mom who's a therapist, I understand when you go, what, you know, kind of what is expected, right? I know that I have to open up. I know that. And I'm comfortable with that. It may take you 2-3 sessions to figure out like where to start. In fact, I had a session, I don't know, I think it was three, four weeks ago where I just was run down and she and I, like, I couldn't think of stuff to talk about. And she, I was just like, I don't know what to talk about. Like, I don't know. Like, nothing's really bothering me. And then it's just a series of maybe one or two questions that propels me to think. And that may lead me to something else, but that's okay too. It doesn't have to be 50 minutes of bleh, right? And it's okay. I think it's also important to, like, I've said to my therapist, I don't know how to say this. I don't know. I'm kind of lost. Like, and again, it's just a matter, you have to be willing to be open. And
is there anything else that you want to add that I haven't asked you about what is going on in the last 6 weeks for you personally, or just from football? There are things that derive that have gotten you to this point.
I think football, I think football helped me. I think I probably would have, it gave me a regiment, right? It allowed me to be focused. So when I was in that, you know, when I was a teenager, when I was in college, I was able to really dial in and focus in on what I was doing because of what my goals were in football. I think the most important thing for young athletes is to use the resources at their disposal, right? There are more resources available. There's social, there are, you know, psychologists and mental health professionals that are on campuses. If you're thinking about it, or there's no shame in it, right? That's ultimately, as a football player, there is no, in any athlete, there is no shame in getting help. Ralph, and this kind of puts the bow on it for me, Ralph Amsden said it perfect. When your knees hurt, you get surgery. And nobody thinks twice about that. Same thing with your brain. As you were saying, you're lifting for your brain. You're taking care of your brain. And that controls everything, right? And yet there's such that stigma. So that's what I would say is seek help. There's nothing wrong with help. There's nothing wrong with not being okay. There's nothing wrong with struggling. Yeah, I just, I don't, so ultimately, no, I don't think football like made where I am, didn't exacerbate it. I think anything that you pour your soul into, you pour all your time and effort into, and then that's gone, is going to leave you with a void. And then how do you deal with that void? And I've had that twice. I did it while I was playing. And then I did it while I was coaching. Didn't really deal with it after I played, because I got into coaching, and then I had to deal with it after coaching, and then avoided it. Honestly, I've avoided it for a while. And then just, as we've talked about, hit that spot where it's like, enough is enough.
Yeah. Proud of you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's good stuff.
Thank you for having me on. And I think it's super important that you're having these conversations, and that, that you're opening up the dialogue to it. And I think that's the most important thing.